I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, you went and saw us hit today. What were we doing today?
High tea, bro. And people, people were killing me because I would put 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds on high tea. We're back. What's up, everybody? It's your coach. It is Thursday, April 1st. Thursday, April 1st. Opening day. Opening day for baseball is to have a coach. R.I.P. my man, Rolando Casanova. He say baseball, Cuban dude. Instead of saying baseball, he say the baseball, the baseball. Opening day, baseball, 2021. Guys, if you haven't yet, right now, if you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast, you're just, at this point, you're missing out. You're cheating yourself. You are cheating yourself. You're cheating on yourself with yourself right now. Subscribe, rate it. This is the best baseball interview I think ever done in a setting like this. The stuff we talked about. You have the second greatest lefty to come out of Miami. No asterisk, no cap. No asterisk behind his name. Record home runs. Little League. Record 540. 540 as a sophomore. Who hits 540 as a sophomore. All-American at Miami. First round pick of the Reds. From Cuba. Just came here dropping bombs, like literally dropping bombs. The stuff we talk about on this show, the authenticity, the openness, it's just crazy. This dude just retired last year, so this is special because this is his first opening day that he doesn't put on a uniform. I think he's played for 11 years, 11 seasons. This is the first time since this dude has been probably like 3, 4, 5 that he's not playing baseball this year. So it's important for me to do my part. Now, I said it's going to be the Tony Romo of baseball, a baseball. If he sticks with it, he's already doing stuff on MLB Network. He's already doing stuff on, I don't know what other network, but the guy's going to be all over covering the game, giving his aspect. Natural talent here. This is natural talent. And anytime I see a dude, he's young, he's a baby still, that has talent, that has a good heart, I encourage and I promote him. I told him, I said, listen, you got something real special here, man. Take advantage. Take advantage of this specialness. Take advantage of the media world. Take advantage of this social media. It's huge. So, without further delay, I give you the greatest baseball all-around interview in history. And we didn't even get into his pro career because this was late on, I think we shot this like on a Saturday night or something, Friday night. And my daughter was waking up and then I had to help because we had the other baby and I'm the husband of the year. So I had to help. But that aside, this is the greatest baseball interview ever done. There isn't anything better than this. And we didn't even get to his big league career. We're going to do part two. I'm going to do it in person. I'm going to grab this dude in person. We're going to do it face to face and talk pro stuff, more swing stuff, more launch angle, more why 1 year he hit more, another years he didn't, why he got that All-Star year, what would he have done differently? So this, if you're a baseball player, the father of a baseball player, the mother of a baseball player, the neighbor of a baseball player, this is the episode you listen to. This is the episode you download and you keep there for the rest of your life on your phone, when you're on a plane, when you're on a boat, when you're on a bus, when you're walking, when you're running, when you're at the gym. This episode right here is it. Today on the Coach HP Show, we have none other than Mr. 305. Mr. 305, Yonder Alonso. Let's go. Boom, 3, 2, 1, and we're on. Look, we could do this. I can move you back a little bit.
There we go. Yeah, that's nice. That's better.
Give you a little space there to breathe. Yonder, as I think of you, bro, since you've always had a sweet beard, but in college, you never had it. Is that because in UM they made you be clean shaven?
You know, Jim Morris was the coach. And, man, Jim Morris was strict. Like, he was super strict. And he had so many rules, right? But it was the beauty of University of Miami, right? And, like, the baseball, I guess, alumni and baseball, like, just rules that they had for years and years and years and years. You know, we're talking, like, back in the 80s and 90s, right, where these cats were, like, they were crazy. You know, the stories I used to hear when I was there was, like, it was nothing like us. I mean, we were, like, puppets. We were little babies compared to these guys. So he created these rules, and obviously one of the rules was you have to be clean-shaven. And as much as, like, that was, like, probably the easiest rules they had, you know, which was just get clean-shaven. Like, all right, no big deal, whatever. But, you know, we had some problems because when I would go out in the summer, you know, I like to have my beard and stuff like that, and I was just growing a beard for the first time, and I tend to have a pretty decent beard, and my beard game is pretty strong compared to the rest of the guys. And
right,
I like to, like, just rock my beard, and I would just, like, let it roll as much as it could all summer. And then, you know, once fall ball would come around, then, you know, it was off.
Yonder, you were one of the first guys to actually, if I'm not mistaken, you would blend in the top here of the beard, right?
Yeah, and that's pretty funny. Man, look, when I was in San Diego, I was like this San Diego, you know, ball player and the whole thing, right? And I was a rookie there, and it was awesome, cool. But I never forgot where I was from, right? And I was from Miami, Florida, the 305. And I always wanted to do that. You know, DJ Khaled was that type, that Rick Ross, you know, the guys that had the beard. And, you know, he didn't have a beard, but you know, this beer game was just, like, about just having a nice beer, man, and being from Miami. So I had, like, my fade, and then I had my beer game, and then I would fade it up. And then I had this barber there in San Diego, and he was, like, the first guy to say, hey, you want to make your beer, like, darker? Because that was kind of, like, the thing there.
Bro, don't tell me that, like, to put the marker in or that dye thing.
I would do the Just for Man. And I'm 21, 22 years old doing a Just for Man beard. And I remember I would do it, and it was nice. Let me tell you, it was nice, right? And all these veteran guys, you know, they had all the whites and stuff like that, the stuff that I have now. And they would be like, yo, how did you get your beard? Like, is that natural? And I would just be like, yeah, man, this is natural. This is as natural as it gets.
I'm Cuban. What are you talking about, bro?
This is how it is. Drink a lot of Cuban coffee and you'll probably get the same shit. And people, you know, all these guys were just like, you know, Chris Headley would be one of the guys. And Chris DeNorfio would be one of the guys. That Chris DeNorfio had a nice beard, but his beard was like white, black, orange, like very spotty. And he was coming all the time.
How often would you go get it touched up?
Oh, man, I'm from Miami, man. It's every 8 days. I mean, if you ask my dad goes once a week, you know, every Thursday. My dad goes and gets a haircut every Thursday.
Nice, dude.
And I'm like, it's a little too much. You know, my dad's 55 years old. He looks great. I mean, all props to him. You know, he looks amazing. But every 8 days he gets a haircut.
Yeah, but listen, though, bro, look at your set of hair, right? Which is phenomenal, bro. The hairline, I mean, that is like, that's it, bro. Did you get that from pop's side or mom's side?
You know, I think both of my parents have really good hair, and my whole family's got good hair. So, you know, my sister's got good hair. My mom's got good hair. My dad's got good hair. I don't really know. I think it's just a blend of both. And I also want to give it up to the Cuban like culture. You know, I think the island and being on the beach and being on the water and being in that sunshine, being, you know, I'm not 8 months in the snow inside, right? Yeah, I'm out in the sun. It's December and it's January, and I'm out here, like, you know, just enjoying the sun and like just living it up, you know.
Yonder, what part of Cuba are you from?
You know, I'm from Havana. I'm from Havana, Cuba, which is the capital. Obviously, I would like to say it's probably the best baseball team that they have in Cuba, which some people may say different.
Is that Los Almendares? Who are they? Who's
Los
Habaneros?
Los Industriales.
Los Industriales.
Yeah, and my dad played for them. So
No way.
Yeah, my dad played for them for 11 years, and he was a catcher, and then he became a coach for them. But yeah, you know, I always like to say I grew up in the stadium, man. I grew up there, and I grew up, you know, I would like to say as a Cuban born, lived there and all that, you know, I had a really good childhood as I can have, right? Where that was, you know, I had dinner on the table. It wasn't breakfast or lunch, but it was dinner. And, you know, my dad he made it work, man. He made it work.
Wait a minute. So you said you just had what, dinner? You would eat one time a day?
Well, you know, I would like to say I would have, you know, my lunch as well, or whatever we can have, or my breakfast. But the main priority there was to have food. And it wasn't to have the nicest car, the nicest shirt, the nicest shorts or shoes. It was about to have food on the table. So I would definitely have, I would have my glass of milk or yogurt or, you know, whatever I could for breakfast, and then have a little snack for lunch. And then, you know, I would have dinner on the table with my favorite meal is probably rice and eggs. And most of the time that was a very special thing.
Would you do it with platanitos also? The rice, eggs, would you do it with platanito also, or just rice and eggs?
If we can find platanitos, we're millionaires.
You're a millionaire, huh? Bro, I was born in Cabaiwan.
Okay.
Which is La Villa, which now I don't know what the name is, bro.
Yeah.
When you were growing up, but I my first birthday was in Spain, so I was real young. When you were growing up, bro, did your parents talk to you and say, like, dude, this shit's fucked up, you're going to act a certain way, portate bien, whatever? Or were you just like, hey, this is what it is, and they didn't even talk about it?
You know, I don't think I've ever been asked that question. And I've been asked a lot of questions in my life, but never that. And I think you just know, right? You just know. And you know because of the struggles. And you know because of reality. You know by just your friends. And you know by, you know, just going home at night and understanding what's going on, right? You know, as a Cuban kid, people don't understand this, and they really don't. But you grow up fast. I mean, real fast. And it's a funny story. I can tell this, rest in peace to my cousin, but he taught me how to play chess, and he was 6 years old.
Wow.
And I was in college.
No way.
He was 6 years old. He taught me how to play chess.
Damn.
So you think about how quickly you grow up there.
You mature. Yeah, you mature fast.
And bro, you have to. You have no choice because you have to go get it every day. Whether that's asking your neighbor for an ounce of sugar or asking your neighbor for a cup of rice. You have to mature, and you have to understand that you got to get it. And it's a humbling experience, but it's also a gratifying experience knowing that, you know, no matter what else, everything else is great in life, right? Whether that's waking up the next day or having some bread on your table, you're just blessed and thankful for what you have. So, you know, I talk about this all the time to kids or whoever, is no matter how messed up this world is right now, right, in our country and all this stuff, all this left and right and whatever, black and white, it's all this crazy madness. But you wake up every day and you open your fridge and you may have some water, you may have some cereal, you may have some bread. And if you don't have, you can ask your next door neighbor for some and they can help you. And, you know, I think for me, like that in itself is a blessing, because in Cuba, you don't have that. If you ask your next neighbor for some sugar, they might not have.
Yonder, you could do Instacart order and they'd bring it to your house, bro.
If you're blessed enough to have Instacart and to afford that, you know, you're about it.
It comes to you know what I'm saying?
You know, but right now I can knock on my next door neighbor and be like, hey, you got some rice? Yeah. And I'm sure that they will give you some rice. So for me, like being in Cuba was a blessing in the sky, because it teaches me how to grow up and how to welcome the real world, which the real world is like not it. But it teaches you how to give that to your younger generation, which are my kids or the kids that I see that I can, like, you know, kind of express myself to them and kind of just give them that overall foundation of what life is really about.
Yonder, when you were young, so you started obviously probably baseball in Cuba.
Yeah.
Did you know you were good at a young age?
You know, I think I had an idea. I was a little better than the average teammate. You know, I grew up in the game. My uncle played baseball. My godfather played baseball. You know, everybody around me played baseball, and I played baseball on the streets. I played baseball in my you know, downstairs. I lived on the fourth floor in Cuba. So I lived, anytime I had a chance to play baseball, my dad would take me a lot. Once we started coaching, he would take me a lot on the trips. So I would play baseball, you know, where there's batting practice or whatever going on, I would be out there, and my game got better and developed quickly. But, you know, the work ethic is what really took on for me. And I was able to really take that into another level. And
separate. What age did you start noticing that work ethic? What age?
Oh, I think from day one. I think you're born with work ethic. I think, at least for me, in my standard, Cuba and my dad, and, you know, work ethic comes from home and mom and dad. And obviously your peers and people around you can definitely facilitate and help that process get, you know, rush. But I think work ethic comes not from baseball or from yourself. I think it comes from home. And I think that's just how my parents raised me, and how my parents were, like my mom and my dad, they were like, they were about it. You know, you got to work. You got to work to put food on the table. You got to work to, obviously, you know, when we got to this country, make sure we had a good education. And that was all through work. So for me, work ethic was like instilled into my house from day one, like the minute I was born, you know.
Yonder, when you got here and you saw the baseball competition, when you're like, oh, my God, I'm about to fucking crush it and destroy everybody here.
You know. Well, I had a difficult, people don't realize this, but because we never talk about this stuff, but, you know, being an 8, 9, 10-year-old that doesn't know the language is a barrier.
And it's crazy because you don't sound like you have an accent to me, bro. Like, you have more of an American accent than my accent.
Well, I think that has to do with baseball, and that has to do with probably the ability of traveling and being around people that don't know they don't know Spanish. And for me, that was something that I was accustomed to. And my vocabulary or my lingo, I would say.
Sounds great. It sounds great.
It changed. So for me, you know, I think the biggest struggle I had was language barriers, where somebody was talking English or they were making fun of you as a young kid. And I would be like, you know, when you come from Cuba, you're green. Like, you're as green as it gets, right? So if they just look at you sideways, you're fighting.
¿Qué le pasa a este?
So my anger was more of an issue than my actual, like, but as quickly, you're a kid, right? You're a kid, man. Yeah, and you start realizing that actually that part of my life really helped me develop my education and develop my physical game in itself, because, you know, it's cool to talk about, you know, what's a single, what's a double play. That's Spanish. That's Spanish and English for me. Home run, like, that is all translated into the same language. That's an international language. So for me, I just knew, like, hey, if I turn a double play, I know what it is. If I hit a home run, I definitely know what it is. And that's what kind of, like, transpired me into, like, becoming better and better and better as I grew.
Hey, bro, let's talk hitting, since you mentioned hitting, bro. I have you as top two lefties out of Miami. I would put one, if we take out steroids, you're number one. But we got to put Palmeiro's there one ahead, I think. Hey, Palmeiro, then you, bro. In the history of Miami, man, you are known for hitting. So I have you as top two hitters, lefty, in the history of Miami, bro.
You do?
Yes. You've been okay. Dropping bombs from a very young age, man. From, I remember Rolly telling me, like, bro, there was like two seasons back to back. We must hit like 40 home runs or like just crazy amount of shots, bro. Did you try to hit home runs? Did home runs come natural to you?
No, man. And by the way, who's number one?
Well, I say you're one if we take out steroids because Palmeiro.
Is, okay.
So we have to, like, you know, he fucked up with the steroid shit. So let's put an asterisk there, you know. But you just – and I would put that – and the reason why you're so up there is because, A, he went to Mississippi. So he played in Mississippi.
Yeah, I went to you.
I don't know what his numbers were there, but you went to Miami, bro. Right. And that gives it more thing, but then his career is a little more up in the big league.
It is thing, man. Whether but steroids, there. I feel like whether steroids or not, if we're going to talk about that, hey, man, it was that, it was like that, those waters, you know, like those waters were those waters. And that's just where you were at. You were fishing during those waters.
Yeah.
And for me, that's just what it was, you know? So for me, that's my take on it. I don't agree with it, but those were the waters we were fishing in at the time, you know?
I think to give you respect, because listen, bro, you could have gotten into any water you wanted to.
But correct.
You decide. So we got to give you props for doing that. So that's how I roll.
I agree. And I think I'm thankful for that. You know, I thank you for that as well, for saying that. But for me, like, getting back to that question, was it was never about home runs. It was about how can I be a pure hitter? I mean, I think nowadays with these kids, man, like, everybody just wants YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. And I think people forget the process. And the process is such a deep intel type of way of analyzing hitting, because, you know, it's a boring thing. And when you're training hitting, and when you're training how to get better, and when you're training how to get that muscle memory, it's repetition after repetition, but it becomes boring. But you have to fall in love with that boringness, and you have to fall in love with the actual programming of your mind to how to become an elite hitter. And you have to be a hitter before you become a home run hitter. And I think every home run hitter talks about that. And they'll tell you, like, you know, the minute they go down is when they're chasing something that they're not. And this game is every year and every day and every month is changing. And you have to be able to make adjustments. And whoever is the quickest to make adjustments is the one that's basically going to survive at the end of the year. And you're going to have 500, 600 at-bats. If you don't make adjustments, you're going to hit 200. And that's very, very simple. And the reason you got to become that pure hitter that they talk about is by just becoming that everyday adjustment maker.
I agree. Dude, I agree. You went to Coral Gables. I hit once or twice.
I think you broke on me.
Did I break up again? Am I there?
Yeah, you're here now.
All right. It's all good. All right. If you see me free, just let me know. We'll edit. I'm going to edit that. Don't worry.
Okay.
You played at Coral Gables. I never hit really well when we played against Coral Gables. I couldn't understand, like, the backdrop with the cars on Sledgeon. Just fucked me up a little bit, bro. Yeah, but
the Merritt Park Mall?
I don't know. Merrick Park wasn't there when I was there. It was just
man, that changed the whole outcome of everything.
It was like Le Monte or something back there. There was no Merrick Park.
You couldn't see the ball.
That's right, because the building is like beige. So it's like light there.
Beige.
Dude, when you got to Gables, that you found out that you were like, what, all city as a freshman, no?
Yeah, I was like second team all day as a freshman.
Damn, bro.
Second team all day as a freshman, and I was super proud of myself too, man. I was like, all right, you know, second team, I'm cool. And then I was like, you know, then like that summer, Rolando Hernandez, he is the coach and the hitting coach for Columbus High, who had been with me, you know, since I was 9 years old, right? So he had seen like my game from day one. And he's like, you know what you need? You need like a summer of strength. And I'm going to get you a trainer, you know, and I had no money for that. So Rolando took it upon himself to be like, you know, you're going to train. you're going to get bigger. You're going to get stronger. You're going to get after it. So that's like my first time ever being like, okay, this is the real deal. Like this is legit. I'm going for this now. Right. I knew I had the talent, but I'm really going for it. This is about investing in your body, investing in your game and, you know, the whole nine. So we can talk about that. And
we're going to talk about whatever you want, bro. This is you.
Man, that summer was real. All right. That summer was real. And I had
Where'd you train?
I trained at a school, Archbishop Carroll.
Okay.
And I would also train at Miami High. So my parents, man, my mom, I mean, she's a soldier of them all. She will wake up at 6 a.m. and Rolando will be like, hey, he needs to just have an orange and a banana for breakfast. That's it. So, you know, my mom would just give me these like carton box Tropicana juice, you know, whatever she could afford and a banana. Boom. And I hated orange juice and banana. Like that mix for me was just
It's too much sugar.
Yeah, I was like, where's my Cuban toast and my café con leche?
Yeah, bro.
Why do I need to be eating this stuff?
Hey, hold on a second. Since you mentioned café con leche, let me ask you a question. When you make your café con leche, are you more of a sugar guy or more coffee guy or 50-50? How do you blend that?
It's very, very simple for me, man. And when I say as simple as it gets, there is no sugar and I'm as regular as coffee as it gets. You know why? Because for me, it's about the leche condensada, bro, the leche evaporada. You know, evaporated milk for me is the condensed milk, I would probably say.
Yeah, it's
got everything. It's got the sugar. It's got everything. It's got the calories. It's got the fat. I mean, it's got it all.
It's almost like caramel, right? It's like caramel milk or something.
Yeah, so you just drink that and it's a bomb. But pretty much, my milk is the it.
Yonder, and it's interesting because here it is, what it is not to know, bro. Here's you about to train to get in shape, and you were loading you up with sugar to go train and get in shape. It's just crazy, you know?
It was nuts. But, you know, that was probably the only meal I was going to have all day.
Right. That's true.
So I would go and I would go train. I would go run first. I ran first. Then I would hit the gym. And this is like the first time I'm hitting like my squats and my bench and my, you know, and I'm like, I hate weights. Like, I'm not built for this. But
were you solo or was there a group of you guys?
I was by myself.
With who? Who was training? Like some dude?
It was the school trainer, the medicine trainer. And it was Rolando. And he would be like, all right, four laps around the soccer field. And it's like, it's 9 a.m. And I would be like, all right, whatever. And I would just be running, you know. And then I'll get done with that. And then like, all right, the weight rooms. And then we'll go into the weights. And then we'll hit the weights. And he would teach me the whole thing. So I learned a lot about that. But as, you know, as time went on, I saw myself, you know, now I'm hitting the ball over the fence, center field, like in a high school field. Which for me, like that was the first time consistently I was hitting those balls 400 feet, you know, 415 feet. And I was like, oh, I was like, all right. Okay. Like something's going on here. And then I was getting my weight up. You know, I was 140 pounds, 145 pounds, 150 pounds. Then I'm going up now weight and I was starting to look at myself and I was like, all right, I'm getting a little bit more fit. And for me back then was like, you know, when you were in high school, you were about your forearms. You want to see how strong your forearms can be. You know, you see all these football guys and they're all so jacked and you're a freshman. So you wanted to look good and have
to fit in. Yeah.
You wanted to fit that shirt, you know, your uniform. So I'm over here doing my little balls and my stuff, you know, trying to I would go to class with my little clingy, my little clinch. And I was all about it, man. I was all about it. And I got stronger and stronger. I was about it, man. But I got stronger and stronger, man. And that was the thing for me. I was like freshman year, I got after it. That summer, freshman year to sophomore year. And then sophomore year came around and I really got after it. My fall ball, we were playing with Wood in Southwest High. There was a big tournament in the fall. And it was like 6 or 7 teams from high school and they would play every night. During the fall. And it was pretty cool because you had all these seniors that were that could go in the draft. So there was a lot of scouts there. And I saw myself kind of getting to that level, you know, where I wanted to be at. And then
and it's funny because Southwest has that short field for right for lefties that we could.
Yeah. Okay. So I dominated that. You know, I dominated that.
Nice, and, bro.
And I was at Gables High. So I remember I was at Gables High and you know, no, people knew about me. But they didn't know I was about to go hit 540 as a sophomore.
Damn.
I ended up hitting 540 as a sophomore. And I just dominated.
How many home runs?
You know, I want to say like six or seven homers. You know, you only played 20 games.
Which is huge, man. And I tell people, I don't know if you agree, I tell kids, I go, bro, why are you going to risk 200 points in your average to hit two home runs?
No, doesn't even make sense. You know, I'd rather hit four homers and hit 500.
Exactly, bro. Exactly. Wow. Was,
yeah. And for me, like, that was the thing, man. And then my biggest goal was to go pro. Like, I wanted to go pro. You know, I wasn't thinking about college. I wanted to go pro, which people don't realize that because I needed to get my family out of where we were at.
Right. That was a big move. That was a hard move. What did, were you a draft and follow? Or did you get drafted out of high school?
I got drafted out of high school. I was a 17th rounder.
17th? What team?
Yeah, by the Minnesota Twins.
Who talked you out of that?
My parents.
They're like, oh, estás loco, muchacho. Hay que ir a estudiar. Is that what they said?
No, man. It was like this was a deal. Like, I wanted to sign. I even wanted to sign. Like, out of people like don't know this, but like they were giving me like 200 grand, 150 grand, or something like that. And I'm like, we're good. I'll just take this 150 grand. I'll give it to you guys. Don't worry about me. I'll start in rookie ball somewhere. Who knows where in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. You know, like, that's just me. I
got this.
Like, Latin, like, people from Miami, just forget Cubans. Like, just people from Miami. We just figure it out.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, we just.
That's just how we do it. So, for me, it was like, yo, I'm just going to figure this out.
I'm going to figure it out.
I'll give all the money to mom and dad. We're good. And my parents were like, what? Are you crazy? Oh, man. You're going
to do that local, do half of college.
You know, my parents were big in college, though. They were big in education, and that's what people don't realize.
Well, because the Cubans are. Majority of that generation Cubans. Now this generation Cubans different.
You know, my parents, they graduated from college.
Yeah.
My parents didn't play that. They didn't play around.
What, obviously, bro, you must have been recruited by everybody.
Yeah.
What? Give me some cool schools that you were thinking about that recruited you.
Hey, you want to hear? I remember I got a letter from Stanford.
Coño, that would have been strong, bro.
Yeah, but at the time I didn't know what Stanford was.
No, nobody knew what Stanford was, bro.
Nah, and all I could think about Stanford was MySpace. You know, at the time MySpace was the hit, but the MySpace owner was from Stanford, and I was thinking, I ain't going to that geek school. Oh, my son gets a letter from Stanford, he's going to Stanford.
Tom from MySpace fucked it up.
Yeah, he's going to Stanford. And that was like the first thing, you know, this is like the mentality, right, of this Cuban who just doesn't know anything about, obviously, education or, you know, just blinded to the community and like the world.
Yonder, for our parents and people from here, especially at that time, Tallahassee is like going to Canada, bro.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, dude. Who recruited you in Miami?
My goal was Miami because I had, honestly, like, obviously it was the great school, you know. Baseball was the standout of standouts. They were number one in the country forever. But the reason I wanted to go to Miami, it wasn't because of that. It was because it was the only way that my parents could come and see me.
Wow, that's good. And that's good.
That's what people don't realize.
You remember when I think you're what, 33?
Yeah.
So you're 33, I'm 42. If we do the math, I think that's 9. When's your birthday?
April 8th.
April 8th, okay. I'm January. I just had, so 9 years. Bro, I remember when Miami was on Sunshine Network for the first time.
I remember that too.
And they rocked.
Stadiums, and there was a fence in the back. It wasn't like how it is now.
Wasn't it how it is now? No. And they would rock. They would rock the Nike uniforms. And when I saw that.
It was Nike uniforms.
Yeah, you guys wore it. I was like, oh my God, bro. That to me was like, oh my God, dude. When I saw that, I was like, oh man. It was crazy, dude. And then when the Pat Burrell years, bro, that shit just went
orange, out of control. With the orange bat?
Just, oh, bro, and then they had the minus five, the TPX minus five.
Which was illegal, by the way. Let me tell you about that. Those bats are like,
bro, they were hitting.
Why they allowed those things?
They would hit them into the, they would play pepper and hit them into the roof. Oh, in right field, opposite field. They would hit it in the middle of the soccer field. And yeah. I remember seeing that, and I would have died. I would have died to have worn the Hurricane colors, to have a gold chain on. In my dream, if I would have had a Teja, a gold chain, and play for UM, and rock those Nike high tops with the fucking orange stripe, that I would color my shooter. Bro, it's like heaven, bro. Heaven.
You know, it's funny you say that. I colored my shoes in high school just because of UM.
See, bro, people don't know that, bro. You marker it. It's not like now that you get to customize it. And
after every game, it was already worn out.
Already worn out. You're done.
Go back and brush them off and then color them things again.
Dude, when you got recruited by Miami to play Miami, bro, how happy were you, bro?
Man, I'll never forget the letter. The first letter I received from Miami, and it was a practice on a Tuesday. And Laz Gutierrez, who was my head coach, he went to UM as well. He was a lefty pitcher. He's now the Nova head coach. And he was my high school coach. And Laz Gutierrez puts in my locker at Gables High a letter. And as I look at that letter, it says Hurricanes. And it says stamped Hurricanes on it. And I didn't open it. Like, I get goosebumps just talking about this right now. But I didn't open the letter. See, we had practice, and he just kind of looked at me and smirked, and I knew what it was, but I didn't open it. I said, you know, I'm gonna make sure I open this with my parents and my sister. So, you know, I practice for me was a blur, right? All I'm thinking about is, what does that, you know, that letter say? And I get home, you know, and I tell my parents. I had my Nokia phone, and I texted my Nokia phone. All I did was play snakes on them things because – I couldn't pass my limits, my minutes, or the ass whooping was coming.
So was it free nights? You didn't have free nights and weekends, bro?
I had after 9 o'clock, after I think it was after eight, I had free texts and free calls. So after eight, I would, you know, do my thing. But for me was I couldn't pass the limits. So I played a lot of snakes. So for me, it was cool, man. I texted her and I texted my parents and say, hey, I have a letter from UN. And, you know, that text took me like 30 minutes, you know, because you have to press like 777. Like, you have to double press to get them letters. So it's not like how it is now where you just type in whatever the hell you want. But, man, and they were so excited for me when we opened the letter. It said, you know, we know what you're doing, and we're excited to put you on our recruiting list and start recruiting you. And we wish and we hope that you become a Cane for life. And for me, like, I was sold, you know, like, for me, it was like, yo, where do I sign the paper? And I was a sophomore. I was so young. So I knew, like, it was there. You know, I knew, like, all I had to do was just continue to have a good year and continue to ball out and continue to, like, put my name on the map. And I ended up doing that. And I committed as a junior, which was very, very young to commit during those times. Most people will commit as a senior, you know, in the fall or during season as a senior. I committed as a junior, like summer of my sophomore year to a junior year is when I committed.
John, let me ask you a question. I just thought about this right now. You throw righty but hit lefty.
Yeah.
That combo, who taught you that? Or is that just how you picked it?
My dad.
You did that on purpose?
Yeah. You know, my dad, I think he said one day I grabbed the bat and I was lefty. And one day I grabbed the ball and I was righty. And he just made sure he stuck with that.
There's benefits to that because having your bottom hand, your dominant hand.
To hit.
There's some benefits that if you know how to control it. Because I know some people, they can't control it. They tend to being under a lot because this one takes it over. But if you can control it, it's a good combination, bro.
Yeah, it's a good combination, man. And you know, I think for this game was built for lefties.
Right.
This football game was built for lefties. And, you know, people like, we can argue all you want about it, but there's no greater feeling than watching Barry Bonds and Ken Griffey Jr. play the center field.
Yeah, let's
just talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no greater feeling than watching Ted Williams and Pete Rose hit. And there's no greater feeling than Tony Gwynn hitting the five hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, keep going with lefties. We can keep going. Or Chipper Jones.
Yeah. You got Bryce Harper. You get
right.
So many.
And it is what it is. But, you know, watching a lefty hit a baseball or watching a lefty play defense, it's just a beautiful thing, you know?
Yonder, I admire you so much because you've always been proud of who you are and where you came from, bro.
Oh, yeah.
And how you represented Miami and stuff like that. I asked myself why I was the reverse. And we mentioned Gary Vee today, and we talked about him a little bit. Yeah. And he started saying, there's a reason why a couple years ago when the Golden State Warriors were crushing it, all of a sudden he's like, in New York, he sees people with Steph Curry jerseys on.
Right.
And he's like, these are people that are bandwagon fans, or like the Cubans that root for the Cowboys. The Yankee stuff's a little different for us because, you know, like, the Yankees represented something for the Cubans, like America, stuff like that. So I start to think to myself, okay, I'm anti-Miami and all my teams. And I started to ask myself why. And up till a year ago, I realized why, Yonder.
Hmm.
Because my dad was beating the shit out of me on a regular basis. I associated Miami with losing. So that's why I was a Michael Jordan fan in the 90s. That's why I was, when the Dolphins were around, I would go for, how crazy is this, for the Buffalo Bills. I had like a Thurman Thomas thing in my room.
You were a Bills fan?
Because I just lost.
At least you're not a Jets fan. If you weren't a Jets fan, we're
good. No, I should. But I was just losing. And then I remember going to a UM football game and wearing, look how stupid is this, bro, Seminole hat.
Because
it's horrible. But I figured out that was the reason why, right, as an adult, it was like, because I was getting my ass kicked so much. I'm like, bro, Miami fucking sucks, bro. I don't have nothing to do with Miami, bro.
Yeah, it was a bad taste. It was a bad taste.
Super bad. And when I left to Los Angeles, it just changed my whole thing. But I admire you.
How did it change when you went to LA?
Because I noticed that there's nothing like being Cuban away from Miami.
See, that's what happened to me in San Diego. And I think that's what happens to most Miamians and most Cubans. And you don't have to be a Cuban. I think, you know, every Colombian or Dominican or whatever. I mean, I know a lot of Dominicans. Shit, my brother-in-law, he's Dominican, and he reps Miami harder than anybody else in this game. As a matter of fact, like, he has his shoes made he makes sure that he's got some Miami swag into him. His insoles are palm trees. His insoles are downtown Miami. And, like, he just swags that Miamian stuff on him. And it's just curious. I'm curious to, like, know, like, what really changed you. Because, you know, I think you went to LA and you changed. And for me, that's the hit for me, right? When you leave Miami, is I think people really don't realize, like, how great of a city it is, despite all the stuff that's happening in your world. But when you leave and you just admire, like, what you really have, right? I see in your back, you have the beaches, right? And you have a picture of beach, and, you know, let's just talk about that for a second. I mean, there's people are getting 18 inches of snow right now. And yeah, we have the beauty.
Yonder, you know how much people spend for what we have in our backyard, bro?
Yeah.
How much money people spend. But I almost looked at it like I was meant. See, you got lucky because of baseball. Baseball forced you to leave Miami.
You had to leave.
I almost felt that God, the universe, whatever, was programming me to be like, dude, for you to reach whoever you're going to reach, you got to get out of here.
Right.
You're not, because if not, you're going to be in your dad's shadow the whole time. And that was just a complete disaster. And it's funny. Tomorrow I'm going to meet with the FIU coach. So I'm going to talk to the team. And I went to FIU the funny thing with me is I played at Braddock, complete disaster, right? You crushed it this is so funny. You crushed it in your scout days and all your stuff. Bro, I remember they used to have, I don't know if they had it in your time, the North and South All-Star game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hell yeah. That was like a big, that was a big deal.
So Pepe Ortega, my boy, remember Pepe Ortega put me
with a cigar?
With a cigar, bro. You're
a mile away.
Yeah, bro. So he put me, look, you're going to love this lineup. He put me fourth batter, okay, where I'm representing the South. My first batter is a guy named J.R. Mounts, who okay. went to signed with the White Sox out of high school. Beast, okay. went to Key West.
Okay.
Second batter is Manny Crespo. You know Manny, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Third batter is a guy who went in the first round named Jose Nicolas.
Okay.
Okay. I'm fifth batter. I'm fourth batter. Okay. Like we're talking about stack, bro, stack. But my problem was that since I had identity issues, you know where I would try to showcase that? When I would hit. So I am a beast contact hitter all day long, bro. But what happened is I would see you, and I'd be like, I want to hit like yonder. So I'd imitate your style. I'd do whatever. And I don't have your skill set. I don't have your eye-hand coordination. And all I did was, bro, I grabbed this wooden bat. Look at this now. Everybody's hitting with metal, but I'm a genius. I go, look at this. I'm going to think ahead. And I used a wood bat. Totally heavy, totally wrong. I get jammed. A disaster, bro. A disaster.
A pandemic within a pandemic.
Boy, a disaster, bro. Let's do that. I'm like, fuck this baseball shit, bro. I am done with this, bro.
You know, did you know right there and then that, all right, this shit ain't for me?
No, because
when did you find out that you were like, all right, this ain't for me?
In high school, bro, I was like, I can't, because the problem is, I don't know how your dad did it, but my dad didn't have any balance, bro. It's like I'm losing on every level, because if we come right now, we compare, and some people will talk to me about this, they go, okay, did you have a car in high school?
Did you have a car? I had a car in college, not in high school. My mom would drive me everywhere.
Your mom would drive you around. Perfect.
Yeah, neither so it's college is where I really like had my okay. car.
Neither did I. Did you have a TV in your room?
No.
Neither did I. So we're even there, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Would your parents let you go out to parties and do stuff like that?
Yeah.
With moderation, probably, right?
Yeah, baseball in my mind.
My dad forced the baseball so much that it's like, bro, really? And then it wasn't like, he's like, oye, ponte la gorra bien. You got it. Like, it was so like military style that he just probably destroyed me. And it just.
I was on a team that it was like that. And everybody would wear the hats backwards, or everybody would wear the hats, like, you know, like up, wide, because it was like, right? And one day I did that, and that didn't go so well. Yeah. It was my dad. And my dad was I would like to say my dad was very, few words. When it came to baseball, few words. My dad kind of like, let me figure it out. And I
when
think
you strike out, what would he do?
He just let me figure it out. That's he would grab me later in the car. You know, he would let me figure it out on my own because you have to, you know, I think parents like get confused, man.
Dude, let's talk about that car ride for a second, because that's where kids get destroyed the most. Talk to me about the car ride with your dad. How was he?
The car ride after a game or before a game?
When you did bad. No. When you did bad in a game that you didn't do good.
My dad was good. I think my dad was like, he would just go over the scenarios. I mean, my dad knew baseball. It was more my mother that was like kind of the pain in the ass.
See, Yonder, but I'm convinced that your dad's attitude.
And my mom just didn't know. It was my dad.
That's the problem, because muchacho, la la hola, muchacho.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't about hitting the baseball or not. It was more advanced than that. You know, my dad played. So
no, I'm talking about your mom.
My mom would be like, tú tienes hambre, tú tienes hambre. Hambre con la mierda esa que hiciste en el play, you know, like stuff like that. Like, how are you hungry? Look at all that crap that you did. You know,
yeah, you shouldn't be hungry.
You should go to sleep, shower, and go to sleep. You shouldn't be hungry,
dude.
But my dad was a little bit different. My dad was like, "What were you thinking here? And what were you thinking there? And you know, you got to hear your cut, or you know, you got to do this." He wasn't so concerned about the physical aspects of it. He was more concerned about the mental stuff of what I was thinking about, because it's all about mental, right? It's all about – and my dad, what I didn't realize is that during those times – we're talking about 10, 11, 12 years old, right? He was putting in my head how to think And when shit's like loose, like a loose cannon, you're under control. And that goes a long way because life in itself, and I'm doing 60,000 people. But my heartbeat, listen to this. This is crazy. And I've worn a heart monitor thing during a game. And I'll never forget this. And we're in Oakland, and I wore a heart monitor, and I ended up winning the game with a home run. Okay. And people like don't even know about this stuff, but my heart rate at the moment was 130. And 130 is like you're out for a jog. And this is the 10th inning, men on first and second with two outs, and you're the home team. And you're 12th inning, and you're out of guys on the pen. So you have no more guys. We're going to start bringing in position players because we're out of guys. Their team knows that, and we know that. And here I am coming up, and there's only one thing on my head. We're going home. And yet my heart rate is at 130. Anybody else's heart rate is 180, 160, 170, right? And we don't know what to do, but I'm not panicking. I'm convinced that all I need to do is worry about what's now, like what's going on now, because my work has been done. But my dad put that on me when I was 10, 11 years old. See, he wasn't punishing me at 10, 11 years old. He was preparing me for life, and he was preparing me for whatever can coming in, and the patience to understand the actual like work at hand. And that's the way I live. That's the way I am. And yeah, we can get mad and whatever, all this stuff, but you have to be under control, and you have to understand what's going on to be able to be who you are as a person. And I think that's more of like what my dad did for me. He was preparing me for life, whether that was, you know, when I had a good game, everybody knew I had a good game. He wasn't talking to me about a good game. He was talking to me about the error I probably made.
Right.
And I was like, damn, like, why are you talking to me about the error I made? Like, I just went 3-for-4. We got to talk about the error. Because sometimes when things are going good, there's some loose cannons going on, and we got to take care of those loose cannons.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And that's just life. Like, that's just life.
I respect that so much, man. And I'm the reverse.
That's my dad in a nutshell, yeah. You know?
I respect that so much. And that's why I see that in you, man. See, I got the reverse of that, bro. I got the shit beat out of me. I had nowhere to hide. And yeah. It's so funny. My last game. So I walked on. I had no offers as a senior. Walked on to Miami-Dade when three teams weren't turned into one with Steve Hurts. Same move, bro. Completely crushed it. Made the team. I'm going the other way. I'm hitting like a beast. But in the season, I sabotage it again. And I'm trying to hit home runs. And I become a disaster.
Why did you think you did that?
Because of my ego, bro. Because I wanted to impress everybody. Because I was losing so badly in my life. I was in such misery of being an absolute nobody. And when you're getting beat, like closed fist beat, and it's happening to you, and it's happening to your mother, and it's happening to your sister, you don't understand. You're not aggressive. I had this thing to peacock so badly, and I wanted to be guys that like Deion Sanders, and I wanted to be like Canseco. Like I wanted to be those kind of guys because I was losing. I felt
right
in my thing, you know, and I had no cool clothes, I had no swag, I have no nothing. It's just
right.
So I had this weird thing inside me that I wanted to pop, and I wanted to pop, and then I use a lot my ability to get chicks, almost as like a peacocking thing. You're like, oh, look at me, look at all the chicks I get, whatever. But it's empty. And all that was empty, and it's a showing off thing, bad, you know. I stopped playing there. I take two years completely off. We're one day on the beach in the water. My dad goes, tú sabes que tú tienes mejor swing todavía en este pueblo. And I was like, you know what? I just go, you know what? He's right. I'm going to go play baseball. I have 2 years. So I want to talk to Morris. And I knew Morris because my sister worked at a golf shop, Deering Bay, where he used to golf.
Deering Bay, yeah.
Yeah. So I go, you know what? I went and talked to Morris. Bro, he loved me. And he played at North Carolina also. So we had that little thing.
He goes, State.
Yep. He played there, and I played at Pfeiffer for a year, bro. And
no way.
Yeah. You've heard of Pfeiffer?
Yeah.
Bro, I played at Pfeiffer University. So talk about the Miami experience. So I went to Pfeiffer. I got to show you my ID. Tan like a monster, wearing these like they thought it was crazy. I had hair like you back then, bro. Hair, buddy. I had these like I'll never forget, he's like light yellow Calvin Klein, like Oscar briefs, bro, with this Figaro link chain with a cross like this. You couldn't be any more Miami Cuban, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
In hell, I got there and I was like, what the fuck is this, bro?
Yeah.
And it was just, they used to call me La Vida Loca because Ricky Martin started to hit back then. Yonder, I did all that, dude. Same operation. I start to hit, try to home runs. The whole program goes to shit. I come to Miami. Ironically, they hire the coach they hired, who was 23 at the time, 20 years old, who I had him on my show, is now the manager of Duke baseball.
Okay.
And who's my boy. And he calls me and says, "Oh man, you got to come back." And I start playing and I do amazing. But I had started hooking up with Miss Columbia down here in Miami in the beach. And I started fucking using, because there was no cell phone back then. So I got the player baseball line, the coach's line, which is illegal, to call Miami, to call this chick. So I'm going through all that, bro. And then I think my eligibility was going to be questioned. So I'm like, fuck this. Wilhelmina had just got me, scouted me. I go, I'm going to go to Miami and be a model. And I left the house. Like, it was a big deal. So I didn't even come back to my dad's house. I came to the chick. I lived with the chick for a little bit. Did all that. Yonder, 2 years off, do the FIU thing. He says no. I go see Casanova, rest in peace, at FIU. And I try out, and I make the fucking team, bro. As a fifth-year senior, a team that was stacked, that went to regionals, super regionals that they lost against Mark Pryor. Seniors everywhere, and I made the team. And I was like, I took the approach, which I do now in life, is, you ever seen Coming to America?
Of course.
When he's the Prince of Zamunda, that he's so happy sweeping at McDowell's. That was me at the FIU baseball field, brother.
That's awesome.
Zero ego. I hit like 7 home runs in the fall. I make the team perfect.
You're feeling nice.
I'm feeling nice. And you know what my goal was? I go, if I can just hit at Mark Light Stadium, I'm set, bro. Just take You're BP. Set. If I can fucking take BP and try to hit that fucking parking stay over there, I'm going to be set. Dude. It doesn't count, but we played you guys in the fucking Homestead bullshit tournament. We used to have a Homestead tournament. We played Miami. I got a pinch hit thing, which was my last at bat. I got edge of the bat because I was trying to destroy the ball. Grounded out to the second baseman. And when I got back, we started traveling. And I didn't play. And bro, believe it or not, man, one day our first baseman got injured. Who was the guy who set the home run record in college? Brad Eldred. Played in the big leagues for a little bit. Huge, big guy, 6'5", righty, a monster. He put somebody else to it. I played first base. I played first base my whole life. He didn't put me. My dad, before the game, comes up to me. He goes, hoy tú le caes a piñazo a Price, o yo voy a brincar la seca y le voy a caer a piñazo. And Yonder, to translate in English, he goes, you go fuck up the coach, or I'm going to jump the fence and fuck him up in the middle of the game. I go, I'm done. I grabbed all my stuff, bro. And I just left.
That's it.
And I never looked back. And I ran away as far as I could from baseball, bro.
Was the monkey off your back when you were done?
Yeah, bro. Because I didn't even watch baseball. Everything that happened to me bad was because of baseball.
Yeah. And how come you like love the game so much right now?
I love people, bro. And what happened is God.
And that brings you into the game.
No, because like it's like the scene in The Godfather 3 where Al Pacino's like, they pull me out, but they bring me back in. I was
always bring you back in.
Bro, I was done. Look, I go to Los Angeles to act. What saves me? This is how crazy life is, bro. There's a Yonder, by the way, this is what this is about, bro.
Yeah, bro. This is nice.
How awesome is this, dude? This is like
we can go on.
But this is like us.
Yeah, it's great.
It's sweet.
No, I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. And I really enjoy like not even talking about just myself. Like you see how I'm asking you questions because I really want to know and it's genuine, you know, and it's very real. It's real. It really
That's
is real.
The move. That's and the move, bro.
For me, I have like nothing to hide or like nothing to talk about. Like I can talk about, bro, we can talk about, I don't know. What are your rules?
Right. No
like,
rules.
What are your rules. Like, do you talk about
no rules.
You talk about sports.
Talk about everything. So like I'll give you an example. Let's talk about race, for example. So a lot of people asked me.
No, we can talk about it. Like, because like a lot of people view race because I'm from Miami.
Okay, so let's talk about it. So first of all, we don't count because we get to hide in the Spanish-Cuban thing in the world.
Race. Okay.
So now, a lot of people asked me when the major leaguers started to protest.
Right.
Parents started to reach out to me. I'm like the parent guy, you know. So like, cause I call it how it is. So I tell parents, listen, you're not gonna have another Yonder Alonso here, man. You're gonna have whoever your kid is. Stop trying to imitate that guy. That guy
has your kids.
Exactly. Just let's appreciate the strengths your kids have.
100%.
Right. So that's me 24/7. That's me 24/7. So when the thing happened, the Marlins were playing the Mets. They did the protest on the field. Everybody started to ask me, what do you think? What do you think? Oh, they're kids. They shouldn't be seeing that, whatever. I go, I'm going to tell you what I think about everything. Number one, people shouldn't be committing crimes. That's number one.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
You want to stay out of trouble?
I agree with that.
Okay. Number two, my dad made a million mistakes on the baseball field, but he prepared me for life. The only thing my dad failed to prepare me was to deal with him. But my dad would always tell me, hey, tico, cuando te pare la policía, pon las dos manos en el timón. Yes, sir. No, sir. Don't worry about it.
That's it.
That's it, dude. These people that want to try the cops, that now want to record the cops, okay, that's putting yourself in a situation. I've never had a trouble with the cops one time. Okay. Here's another thing that I tell people. Now, I'm well aware of the way I look. I fit the classic profile, unless you know me, of a criminal. I'm bald, beard, and tattoos. Right? So if you don't know me, like this is fucking delinquent. So if I get stopped, right? what I do is I extra am Mr. Positive to diffuse that, right? So it could be cool to look like Lil Wayne. But that works for Lil Wayne. But if you're going to look like a certain way, be prepared for what's coming. And that's the international rule of life. If a girl's going to look like a whore, she's going to get treated like a whore.
Right.
And those are things that I think where the gaps in all this is in parents. And a lot of these people don't have parents. So we got to talk about stuff like this, that when you get stopped by the police, what should you do in 2021? Now, it doesn't mean that the cops are not out of control. Of course they're out of control. That is obvious. So I'm the guy of where do we find the common ground? Where can we start to build? And I've had on the show Quintin, my boy Quintus, who started the big cops Miami Heat thing. He's an ex-CIA Navy SEAL cop guy, and he agreed with me a little bit on this, you know? So my take on all this is, as long as you he can't mess around with the police, bro.
No.
It's the law. Whether they do good, bad, it's the law. And it's going to be wrong. That's my belief.
Here's my take on it. And it's very, very simple. I mean, and I'm not, it's not because I'm hiding from where I'm from or whatever it is, but, you know, I have a lot of black friends and I have a lot of white friends and I have a lot of Latin friends. And my sister's dating a Dominican who is tan, dark, black, white, however you want to name it. And there is no race issue in my family whatsoever. But I'm Cuban. And to find a Cuban this white is rare. Okay. In Cuba, there is black, white, it doesn't matter. But my point to it is we live in an island that we can't get out from. So we're all the same regardless of who you think you are. Whether you're black or white. As a matter of fact, the two people that raised me and that took care of me a lot of the times when my mom and dad were trying to get food from our table were as dark as dark. And I call them to this day abuela and abuela. Abuela number one and abuela number two. In 2017, I went to Cuba and the only two people that I cared for during those 4 days I was there was abuela number one and abuela number two. We didn't grow up with the history that the black community has in this country, which was Martin Luther King and all the things that have happened during those times. I didn't grow up with that. And I definitely didn't grow up with that here in Miami, because in Miami, I just didn't care. And maybe I was ignorant enough to not care, because I didn't care what was going on outside of Miami. But maybe you can say it was a side of me was uneducated and a side of me was not wanting to know. So maybe for me, that was maybe my fault in not wanting to know these things. But I just didn't grow up with that. For me, I find all that, I just find it equal. And I find people and human race equal, whether you're Black, white, Chinese, I could care less. I could care less. And that's why I think one of the biggest things, and there was a SEAL that I worked with, and I trained with a SEAL. And this SEAL, he said one thing that I'll never forget when he said this to me. He said, you know what I believe kids in high school should do for a whole summer as a freshman in high school is go to the Army for 3 months, spend a whole summer in the Army. And I said, man, why do you think that? And I said, because they got to teach you that when you've been shot, it doesn't matter if you're Black or white, they still got to save your ass. I don't care who you are, because the brother next to me or the brother on the other side, I need to know they have my back because I have their back. See, if they get shot, I got to save their ass.
Yonder, I agree with you so much.
Those are my brothers. So it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
who you are.
I would start, and listen.
That's sports in a nutshell right there.
I'm about to start.
That's who you are.
Listen, I'm about to start. I've always said this. I would eliminate algebra. I would eliminate trigonometry. I would eliminate so many of the bullshit maths that we're not going to use.
I would add life lessons.
I would add how to deal with failure, how to deal with vulnerability, how to be vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
How to say, do you know what, Yonder? I fucked up, bro. I'm sorry, man. I did this. You know what? You got me. You caught me. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about what happened. We were supposed to meet last Thursday.
Yeah, motherfucker. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
Yeah, motherfucker. Last Thursday. And I just forgot. And I didn't hide from it. You know, I didn't say like, oh shit, what story can I make up? I fucking forgot. Yeah. All right. And I think for me, like, there's no greater feeling. You know why? Because us as athletes and us as like, or myself, we've been lied to a lot, and we've been playing this fucked up game, which has a business side to it. And we can totally get on that too. But the business side to it is such a business. It's a business, and they lie to you, and nobody's loyal to this game, right? Like, you're just a number, and it's totally okay with it. And I totally understand why. I get it. I totally understand why. That is one thing about me. I understand why. And right. I respect it. And I respect it because a lot of things they do, I would be like, man, if I was an owner, would you do that too?
Of course.
I would be like, yeah, I probably would do that too. But I will be as truthful as I can be. You know, and for me, like, there's no greater feeling than having a truthful man looking at you and being like, yo, this is what I think about you, and this is what it is, and I forgot. Can we reschedule? Because I forgot. Don't give me a story. Because for me, you know, it's you can see a bullshitter from a bullshitter.
Yeah.
And the minute you recognize that, you're like, now I'm going to play you.
Dude, but that's what I told you today, man. As a guy that just people just, you know how many people tell me? And these are fucking famous people, bro. These are people that the world knows. Hey, buddy, yeah, man, I'm going to call you. Let's chat tomorrow. Call me at 12. Yeah. And I shoot you a text. My man, let me know. I'm ready when you are. Because, bro, I try to be in this world as official as possible, dude.
Yeah, I'll text you before.
Because I don't want to waste your time. And I want to be ready. And I want to be prepared. And
yeah. And
Yonder's like, they get amnesia, bro. It's like, nothing ever happened.
And I'm Do you think that's a – let me ask you this. Because you've dealt with more people totally than I have. I tend to, like, care for myself like in a very small circle type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's like a non-Miami thing?
No, it's I don't matter to them.
Okay, because I just feel like I tend that people from, maybe I'm wrong, but I think people that I try to like put myself around, like people in Miami are pretty real.
Right. No, I don't matter to them.
Man of a man, they'll be like, hey, man, I fucked up.
Yeah, it's, no, but.
You don't matter, you just don't matter?
I don't matter to them that way. They get excited when they see me. They get all this stuff. But what happens is I get put in a special case because since I'm up and coming in what I'm doing, they love it. They get excited. But then when I hold you to what you're telling me, because I'm not bullshitting, you're like, okay, because they don't understand that I slept in a car 6 months to do what I did in Los Angeles. They don't understand that when I became Coach HP was 3 years ago, that I had a wife, that I moved back here to Miami, that I gave lessons, baseball lessons in the middle of the sun,
right,
7 days a week while everybody my age was at the beach and hanging out.
Right.
I was doing that everybody promised me yonder that they would teach me to edit. Nobody did. So the coach had to take his happy positive himself to the Apple store. And I learned how to edit on iMovie 2 hours a day, twice a week for 2 months. And nobody gave me anything, nothing, zero. And I did it myself. And when my wife would sit there and watch me record all days of practices with kids, speak, and then edit till 3-4 in the morning every single night by myself, over and over till I got it. I go, oh, baby, I'm gonna get it. And then when I started doing trips and they weren't paying me, and she's like, are you crazy? I go, but I gotta do this because this is how I'm gonna get it. This is how I'm gonna become somebody. I promise you, give me time. That's what started all this. So now I'm so happy that where I'm at. But you grow, and when you grow, people start reaching out to you.
Yeah.
People are like, yo, Yonder, you got potential, man. Yonder, da, da.
Yeah.
So then you start to like, okay. And then when they fall through, so another thing that's big, Yonder, is how to deal with expectations, bro. That's big.
Oh, I've been living with that all my life. What do you mean?
That shit sucks, bro.
You know what? Expectations for me, I've learned how to like, it's like my, you know those little movies that is like the little devil and then like the nice guy over here?
Yeah.
That's fucking expectations every single day. In a baseball player's world, in a, you know, I had a kid. I had a kid who doesn't know, but you know, I had a young kid who he's a rookie in the big leagues, and he said to me one day, you know, I have so much stress because I'm a rookie, you see, and you guys, and he was saying like me and Manny Machado, we don't have that stress, and I had to stop him right there, and I was like, let me tell you something, bro. If you think you have stress being a rookie, you don't belong in this game.
Yeah.
Stress is making an X amount of dollars, an X amount of years, an X amount of, I would say, development statue in your game. When they're expecting, now they're expecting something out of you. You know, you're a prospect, you're a suspect. But when you're making $30 million and you got a 10-year deal and the name of your face and your face is all over San Diego, my man, the owner comes to see that guy. They don't come to see the prospect.
Right.
And they go and buy an ice cream and they go and buy a quesadilla because they want to see the man do the thing. That, myself, my man, is expectations.
That's expectations.
And if you can't live with that as a rookie, you're not made for this game.
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
Like, I put a stop like right there. Like expectations is all you live for. And like this is what people want out of you. They expect expectations. But you got to live with yourself. And that's why, like, you know, you talk about being a young kid, you know, and how you grew up and how tough it was. But it also teaches you so much positivity in it all, you know, because look at you now, right? Like it should be your story should be put out every single day. For that kid that's going through kind of the same thing or even a worser, you know, situation to build, hey, if he did it, if coach did it, okay, you know what? We can do it.
Yeah. You know, that's why I do it.
Out of Cuba, and he was cleaning offices when he was in college and he became a first rounder. Shit, he can do it. You know what I'm saying? If Manny did it from Brito, taking 3 school buses and taking the metro to go to practice, shit, I can do it too. And like for me, like these are stories that we all had expectations, but it's how you like handled them. Like the way you handled them was look at you now, right? And the way I handled them and the way Manny handled them or people here in Miami that have done it, we should all learn from those things. And you know, people are so concerned about TikTok and like Instagram and the next scroll and like the next thing, but they don't become aware of reality, right? Mm-hmm. They talk about launch angle, but you know, how about hitting the high tee for a minute and like realize that you can hit a line drive up the middle. It's still part of this game.
Brother, I have a post. I have a post that I'm going to tag you on that I put the high tee. And I would tell people, don't ever be scared of the high tee.
Bro.
I mean, I look at it like, why not ask the question?
High T says the day.
You tell me, bro. You talk about that.
High T saves the day. Like, you know, everybody's so concerned of this launch angle and shit. And I'm like, what?
High T, dude. I was going to take videotape of it. I didn't because I didn't want to get kicked out of the place, you know?
Yo, what? But,
buddy, I was about to pull out cameras left and right. It just started.
When you saw that dude, the motherfucker had a bucket on top of a tee.
Bro, and one hand drills, which I love.
This is all we do. Bah, bah, bah. I mean, well, like,
when was the last time you hit? Was it game and that's it, or have you hit now in the summer at all?
Hell no. Hey, I'm retired as retired. My only thing I do is throw flips and
you throw flips, but work out. But you could still hit, obviously, if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I can hit. Yeah, I can hit. I can hit. I mean, look, the last time I hit was, I don't know, it was like August, sometime in September. Sometime in September is when the last time I hit. I was like, all right, I'm done.
I got to get you in the cage, bro. I got to do flips to you, and so you can see lefty on lefty, a little softer.
My numbers don't say otherwise that I hit lefties well, but that was the big leagues. I was facing fucking Chapman and the specialists that are making $8 million a year to go get me out. Like, they were thinking about me at 2 o'clock while I was thinking about 20 other pitchers.
Bro, what was it like when you just got the vibe that you were going to get drafted in the first round, bro? Like, what was that like?
That was a vibe. People don't know this shit about me, man. But, you know, I took out a loan out of college. And you know, I took out a $40,000 loan out of college. No my way. Junior year. Yeah. And, you know, I was living my freshman and sophomore year, I was living with my parents and I was sharing a room with my sister. You know, this is a college dude doing it, right? Freshman, sophomore year, like all American sophomore year. And I'm here like sharing a room with my sister. And I was like, this ain't it. You know, I couldn't have a girlfriend. I couldn't like really experience the college life. And I was like, fuck this. Like, I'm going to go take out money without my parents knowing. And I'm going to take out enough money for me to live a whole year outside of you know, my house. And
that why was the 40 G's? Is that the approval level? Is that the highest you got approved, or you just said 40 was the number?
If I would have taken, if that's all they could let me give, like that's all I, yeah. Like, I said, what's the most you can give me? And they said 40,000. And I said, that's all I got. Yo, if they would have said 100,000, I'll take it.
Yes, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about that. You get the 40 G's.
I thought it was drugs.
Where do you move to? What do you buy with that? Come on, let's go. I
was doing drugs for sure. I showed up to my mom's house with a 40-inch TV in my eyes. I was, what? Excuse me? We had a 20-inch TV with a VCR on it. I showed up with a new flash screen, and my mom looked at me like, excuse me? I'm going to slap you.
Sácate eso, muchacho.
So my mom thought I was like, what are you doing on the side?
Where did you move to?
I moved to, first of all, leaving my house was an issue.
Right.
I didn't talk to my mother for like 2 months.
Really?
That was a problem. That was a situation. Damn. And I was like trying to express myself like, I need to move out. Because what's about to happen to me after this year is life lessons. And I need to be able to understand, like, I can take care of myself, whether that's cooking some eggs or washing my laundry and having my own schedule and not having somebody like, you know, my parents were so good to me, man. And like, my parents worked so hard that it was hard, man. Like, they did everything for me. And whether that's like doing my laundry or like, and I knew like that wasn't it. Like, I knew that wasn't real. And I didn't want to like, where most kids are like, shit, I'm going to milk this till I can't. I'm like, I ain't doing this. Like, no, I need to find my own self. You know, I got to do right. me.
Right, right.
You hear me, right?
Yeah.
And for me, like, that was the thing. Like, that was, like, the situation. I needed to, like, find myself. So, anyway, so I ended up getting an apartment with my buddy, Eric Erickson. And we ended up getting an apartment at Gables Point, which is where most of, like, the kids would live at. And we rented a place. And you know, I found like scraps here and there and the little money I had, you know, to find like my bed. And he helped me out with the couch and the TV and, you know, all that. And I went to the bank and I was like, I'm taking out a loan. At this point, like, I was an All-American. So I knew, like, I was heading into that direction where if I was like a first or second rounder,
you were going to be good.
Get that loan back, you know? Right. I knew, like, I was good for $40,000.
Right.
And I was living, man. I was doing it. I mean, I had a budget, you know, so I knew like I think I had like $2,800 or something like that for the month. So I knew like, you know, I would take my parents, like our favorite restaurant was Outback. So for me, Outback was like going to Prime on 12.
Prime on 12, huh?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let's do this. My daughter is waking up, so I got to help out there.
Okay. Go.
Boom, there it is. Ended abruptly. I couldn't even cut it to end it, but wow. W-O-W. That's how you spell wow. W-O-W. Wow. W-O-W. Greatest interview in baseball history. This is a masterpiece. There hasn't been anything done like this. I'm telling you. Hasn't been anything done like this. Love talking about the high T drill. High T, bro. High T, bro. If you do a T-shirt, I would do it to say high T, bro. It's your coach. If you're not a part of this podcast, you're cheating on yourself. Let's go. Remember, at the end of the day, to go hard, to do your thing, and let's keep slanging positivity all over the place. It's your coach.
Okay, see, that's players. We don't dress alike, we don't rap alike. I shine different, I rhyme different. Only thing you got is some years on me, man. You and your time different. I'm young poppy. Champagne, they know the face and they know the name. Got one watch that could probably pay for like all your chains. You don't change. Greystone, 20 bottles, that's all me. On the couch, wildin' out, yelling free my today I'm free.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.